Rolling.
This is the Fed Sock Films Podcast,
where we continue the conversation sparked on film.
Quiet on set.
You want to know what freedom tastes like? It tastes like this beer.
Take one.
This is, in fact, the classic solution in search of a problem.
Action.
That cannot help but be controversial.
Cut.
With expert discussion and analysis.
With the greatest legal minds on the topic today.
The Fed Sock Films Podcast.
It's a wrap.
Many, many months ago, when FedSoc Studios started to piece together the story for our film, Son of Liberty, Man of Law, we wanted to focus on John Adams, stalwart attorney, influential guy. You might know him as the second president of the United States. But try as we might, we just couldn't keep Samuel Adams out of the story. The role he played in the Boston Massacre trials and the lead up to the revolution was just too significant to ignore. Hey there. Welcome back to the FedSoc Films Podcast. I'm Anne Hartley, your entirely inexpert host. I have here with me Ira Stoll, who I assure you is a bona fide expert on Samuel Adams. In fact, he wrote a whole book about the guy. Welcome, Ira.
Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you back. Tell us a bit about yourself and how you are not like Samuel Adams.
Well, I am a editor and writer, and I am not a politician. Samuel Adams was good at getting elected to office. He got elected to the Boston town meeting. He got elected to the Massachusetts House of Representatives. He got elected to the Continental Congress. He was a good writer too, but I'm not like him in the sense that I am not good at getting elected to things. And I'm not, Samuel Adams was trying to fundamentally change the system of government. Like Massachusetts was part of the kingdom of England, of Britain. And by the time he was done making his revolution, it was not. And so the equivalent of that today would be for me to say something like, you know, Massachusetts should leave the United States, or Boston should secede from Massachusetts and set up its own government so people somewhere else are not telling us what to do. And that is not my project. I'm happy to live in the country that Samuel Adams helped to found, and feel lucky to live in that country.
You and me both. So what do you think, with all his involvement and all of these different things, it's surprising that Samuel Adams was a member of the Sons of Liberty?
Well, so the Sons of Liberty was kind of an informal group that crossed over different classes of Boston. And Samuel Adams was part of that group, but as I mentioned, he was also part of other groups like the Massachusetts House of Representatives, the Continental Congress. Eventually, he was governor after the revolution, governor of Massachusetts, lieutenant governor of Massachusetts. So his role as a member of the Sons of Liberty, while it's interesting, is just one of the roles that he played in the revolution. And while I wouldn't want to minimize it, I also wouldn't say necessarily that it was the key role that he played. Does that make sense? I mean, it's worth exploring the Sons of Liberty, because it was this group in Boston that cut across the lines of college graduates who are kind of fancy and gentlemen at the time, because there was just one college in Massachusetts, Harvard, and that was a big dividing line between the people who went to college and the people who didn't. But the Sons of Liberty included also skilled artisans and craftsmen, and so it kind of created this wider network of support for the revolutionary cause.
Gotcha. Was it kind of like a proto political party, or was it more like I don't know, a bar association or something like that?
It was definitely not like a bar association, except maybe like a bar of the kind that you would have a drink at. The Sons of Liberty were known for meeting in coffee houses and taverns and having toasts to various figures who were challenging the authority of the king. And I think the closest thing would be more like a political club. It wasn't, you know, nowadays our political parties are national and they're focused on getting candidates elected to office. And I think the Sons of Liberty were a little more focused on ideology. I mean, maybe they're a little bit like the Federalist Society in the sense that they were interested in ideas and in creating a social network to support certain ideas, mainly freedom.
Gotcha. I'll take the comparison. We definitely do like to ask the big questions around here. So you said that it's not really Sam Adams' biggest role as a member of the Sons of Liberty. Was he a leader in the, I guess, kind of loosely affiliated organization? Or was he just kind of more along for the ride?
He was definitely not along for the ride. In fact, there were moments when other people took a break from this kind of revolutionary activism. And Samuel Adams kept plugging away persistently. And I think that's one of the reasons the revolution actually succeeded. So what survives hundreds of years later is the written records. So we have diaries, we have newspaper articles, we have letters. The Sons of Liberty was kind of an informal organization. So you have accounts of their activities in newspapers, but there were no elections to say, you know, so-and-so is going to be head of the Sons of Liberty. There are cups, there's like silverware basically. And so there's drinking like punch bowls that Paul Revere, the silver maker, was involved in making. And so you'd see Samuel Adams' name engraved prominently on some of this stuff. And you would see him taking a leadership role, like getting elected to the Continental Congress from Massachusetts or drafting key documents. But there's no, like, you know, minutes of the Sons of Liberty governing board that show he was elected chief grand poobah of the Sons of Liberty. That was more on the down low, because it was a troublemaking group, and so they wanted to keep their activities private from the British, who were trying desperately to tamp down the revolution and, you know, to the point of eventually threatening the lives of Samuel Adams and John Hancock.
Gotcha. So I know many members of the Sons of Liberty, Samuel Adams included, obviously, went on to play just prominent roles, not only in the American Revolution, but in the founding of the United States. Who are some of the other members of the Sons of Liberty, and how do you think their ideas shaped the trajectory of this country?
Well, so Otis, there was a key player named James Otis, but he had like a head injury, and so he got kind of taken off the playing field. And then there was Dr. Warren, and he died at the Battle of Bunker Hill. Hancock was involved as a financier, and obviously his signature is prominent on the Declaration of Independence. But he was such a wealthy and prominent merchant that even though he put up a lot of the money, he couldn't really be kind of running around the streets of Boston organizing parades or going to big drinking events to mark anniversaries of things. He was more like you'd see him with a large group of white horses or, you know, having his portrait drawn in his mansion. So Paul Revere, of course, is famous for his midnight ride and his silver smithing. And so he was the one who, you know, the story is when the British were coming, he rode out to Lexington and Concord to warn the colonists of that. If story that was made famous by Longfellow in his poem about the midnight ride of Paul Revere. And the printers, Benjamin Eads and John Gill, the publishers of the Boston Gazette. And Samuel Adams wrote a lot for the Boston Gazette under a lot of different bylines. And that newspaper played a key role, like I would say, a crucial role in stoking public support for the American Revolution.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned that. I know that Samuel Adams and, of course, the other members of the Sons of Liberty, they really liked to print these negative, almost lurid articles and pamphlets about the British. Did this make them propagandists?
Well, so this concept of propaganda is often hurled at Samuel Adams. To me, it doesn't quite ring true because, to me, a propagandist would be somebody who tries to convince you of something that isn't the case, or somebody who exaggerates the facts in order to enlist you in some cause that wouldn't be just if they stuck to the facts. Now, Samuel Adams, obviously, like any advocate, tried to make the strongest possible case for his point of view and used all kinds of techniques, humor, satire, clever allusions. He was an excellent, you know, he was a great writer, but I would prefer to, I'm sympathetic to Samuel Adams. I mean, I'm on the side of the American Revolution. I think it was a good idea. So you could have a British historian on your show, and that historian might say, oh, Samuel Adams was just a propagandist. But, you know, that would argue for a different outcome, that America should have been more like Canada and kind of a subservient colonial role and continue to be taxed without representation and pay taxes to support this faraway king that they didn't elect at a rate determined by a parliament that they didn't elect. And to me, that, like Samuel Adams, that just doesn't seem just. It doesn't seem consistent with the ideal of rule by consent of the governed, and certain God-given rights. And so, you know, I think if you really see Samuel Adams as a propagandist, then you also see the Declaration of Independence as propaganda. And some people do see it that way. Like, I have a friend, this historian, Andrew Roberts, who's a very distinguished British historian. He just came out with a revisionist friendly biography of King George III. And part of what he does in that biography is say he takes the Declaration of Independence and he does a close read of it and says, you know, well, all these claims that the colonists make against Britain, they're not really quite accurate. They're not true. Well, I don't agree with Andrew about that. And I think part of it is, like, I'm an American and he's a Brit.
Gotcha. Comes down to personal biases, at least a little bit in the end. You've mentioned a couple of times now that the line, no taxation without representation. Was that Samuel Adams' line? Did he come up with that?
Well, I don't know if that's an exact quote, but that concept was very much at the heart of the revolution and of the case that he was articulating against Parliament thousands of miles away in London, setting the rules of trade for the North American colonies. So, and any compromise that was proposed, like Benjamin Franklin was saying, like, oh, we could work it out. Maybe North America could elect a few members of Parliament. They'd still be a minority. So it would really be tokenism. And Samuel Adams realized that it just would not be workable, especially given the distance of the time and the difficulty of communication, to have a representative government, self-government, government like a we the people government characterized by consent of the governed. The seat of power really needed to be moved to North America, and it couldn't continue to be in London.
Gotcha. And it sounds like Samuel Adams and the Sons of Liberty really did play an important role in making sure that that actually happened, and it happened when it did.
Yeah, that's the case I make in my biography of Samuel Adams. Now, different people have different historical interpretations. Like, you could say Samuel Adams was not a military man, and it could be that you could have these great ideas as articulated by Samuel Adams and this revolution in the hearts and minds of the people that he affected, but without the military leadership of George Washington, it all would have come to naught, and the Americans would have been defeated in battle, no matter how passionately they believed in their cause.
Sounds like it takes both.
Yeah, it takes both. But I think Samuel Adams, the role he played was in doing the articulating and convincing and persisting. And in getting it all started. And then, you know, once it did, then other figures, other players like Thomas Jefferson, who was younger, John Adams, the great lawyer, Washington, the great general, they all played their roles.
Absolutely. Well, this has been great, Ira. Thank you so much. And thank you, folks, for listening in. You can find our film, Son of Liberty, Man of Law, on YouTube, Facebook, or fedsoc.org. That's FEDSOC.ORG. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. That's a wrap.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.